What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Letter 83 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Cairo, July 17, 1866. Dearest Alec, I am perfectly comfortable now with my aquatic ménage. The Rais is very well behaved and steady and careful, and the sort of Caliban of a sailor is a very worthy savage. Omar, of course, is hard worked. What with going to market, cooking, cleaning, ironing, and generally keeping everything in nice order, but he won't hear of a maid of any sort. No wonder. A clever old Rais has just come and overhauled the bottom of the boat, and says he can mend her without taking her out of the water. We shall see. It will be great luck if he can. As I am the river doctor, all the sailoring men are glad to do me a civility. We have had the hottest of summers. It is now 98 degrees in the cabin. I have felt very unwell, but my blue devils are quite gone, and I am altogether better. What a miserable war it is in Europe! I am most anxious for the next papers. Here it is money misery. The Pasha is something like bankrupt, and no one has had a day's pay these 3 months, even pensions of 60 piastres a month, 7 shillings, to poor old female slaves of Muhammad Ali's, are stopped. August 4. The heat is, and has been, something fearful. We are all panting and puffing. I can't think what Palgrave meant about my being tired of poor old Egypt. I am very happy and comfortable, only I felt rather weak and poorly this year, and sometimes, I suppose, rather wacham, as the Arabs say, after you and the children. The heat, too, has made me lazy. It is 110 degrees in the cabin and 96 at night. I saw the Mulid and Nebi, Festival of the Prophet, and the wonderful Dosa, treading. It is an awful sight, so many men drunk with religious ardor. I also went to a Turkish harem, where my Darwish friends sent me. It is just like a tea-party at Hampton Court, only handsomer, not as to the ladies, but the clothes, furniture, and jewels, and not a bit like the description in Mrs. Lott's most extraordinary book. Nothing is so clean as a Turkish harem. The furniture is Dutch, as to cleanliness, and their persons only like themselves. But oh, how dull and triste it all seemed! One nice lady said to me, "If I had a husband and children like thee, I would die 100 times rather than leave them for an hour." Another envied me the power of going into the street and seeing the Dosa. She had never seen it and never would. Tomorrow Olinye will dine and spend the night here, to see the cutting of the canal and the Bride of the Nile on Monday morning. We shall sail up to Old Cairo in the evening with the bride's boat. Also Haji Hanna is coming for the Fantasia. After the high Nile, we shall take the boat out and caulk her, and then, if the excessive heat continues, I rather think of a month's jaunt to Beirut, just to freshen me up. Haji Ali is there, with all his traveling materials and tents, so I need only take Omar and a bath and carpet bag. If the weather gets cool, I shall stay in my boat. The heat is far more oppressive here than it was at Luxor 2 years ago. It is not so dry. The Viceroy is afraid of cholera, and worried the poor Hajis this year with most useless quarantine. The Mammal was smuggled into Cairo before sunrise, without the usual honors, and all sightseers and holiday-makers disappointed, and all good Muslims deeply offended. The idea that the Pasha has turned Christian or even Jew is spreading fast. I hear it on all sides. The new firman illegitimizing so many of his children is of course just as agreeable to a sincere Muslim as a law sanctioning polygamy for our royal family would be to us. End of letter 83. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 84 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, off Bulak, August 20, 1866. Dearest Alec, since I wrote, I have had a bad bilious attack, which has, of course, aggravated my cough. Everyone has had the same, and most far worse than I, but I was very wretched and most shamefully cross. Omar said, "That is not you, but the sickness," when I found fault with everything, and it was very true. I am still seedy. Also, I am beyond measure exasperated about my boat. I went up to the Atta el Kali cutting of the canal to see the great sight of the Bride of the Nile, a lovely spectacle, and on returning we all but sank. I got out into a boat of Zubeda's with all my goods, and we hauled up my boat and found her bottom rotten from stem to stern. So here am I in the midst of wood merchants, sawyers, etc., etc., rebuilding her bottom. My Rais said he had carried her on his head all this time, but what could such a one as he say against the word of a Hagawa, like Ross's storekeeper? When the English cheat each other, there remains nothing but to seek refuge with God. Omar buys the wood and superintends, together with the Rais, and the builders seem good workmen and fair dealing. I pay day by day, and have a scribe to keep the accounts. If I get out of it for £150, I shall think Omar has done wonders, for every atom has to be new. I never saw anything so rotten afloat. If I had gone up the cataract, I should never have come down alive. It is a marvel we did not sink long ago. Mabruk, Palgrave's boy, has arrived and turns out well. He is a stout, lubberly boy, with infinite good humor, and not at all stupid, and laughs a good real Nigger Yaya, which brings the fresh breezes and lilac mountains of the Cape before me when I hear it. When I tell him to do anything, he does it with strenuous care, and then asks, "Taib, is it well?" And if I say yes, he goes off, as Omar says, like a cannon in ladyship's face, in a guffaw of satisfaction. Achmet, who is half his size, orders him about and teaches him, with an air of extreme dignity, and says pityingly to me, "You see, O lady, he is quite new, quite green." Achmet, who had never seen a garment or any article of European life 2 years ago, is now a smart valet, with very distinct ideas of waiting at table, arranging my things, etc., and cooks quite cleverly. Arab boys are amazing. I have promoted him to wages, 1 napoleon a month, so now he will keep his family. He is about a head taller than Rainey. I intend to write a paper on the various festivals and customs of Copts and Muslims, but I must wait to see Abu Sefain, near Luxor, the great Christian saint, where all go to be cured of possession, all mad people. The viceroy wages steady war against all festivals and customs. The Mamal was burked this year, and the fair at Tanta forbidden. Then the Europeans spoil it all, the Arabs no longer go to the Atel el Kalig, and at the Dosa the Frangi carriages were like the Derby Day. It is only up country that the real thing remains. Tomorrow my poor black sheep will be killed over the new prow of the boat, his blood streaked upon her, and his flesh sodden and eaten by all the workmen, to keep off the evil eye, and on the day she goes into the water some fikis will read the Koran in the cabin, and again there will be boiled mutton and bread. The Christian Ma'alimin, skilled workmen, hold to the ceremony of the sheep quite as much as the others, and always do it over a new house, boat, mill, water-wheel, etc. Did I tell you Omar has another girl, about 2 months ago? His wife and babies are to come up from Alexandria to see him, for he will not leave me for a day, on account of my constantly being so ailing and weak. I hope if I die away from you all, you will do something for Omar for my sake. I cannot conceive what I should do without his faithful and loving care. I don't know why he is so devotedly fond of me, but he certainly does love me, as he says, like his mother, and moreover, as a very affectionate son loves his other. How pleasant it would be if you could come, but please don't run any risks of fatigue or exposure to cold on your return. If you cannot come, I shall go to Luxor early in October and send back the boat to let. I hear from Luxor that the people are all running away from the land, unable to pay triple taxes and eat bread. The ruin is universal. The poor sheikhs El Beled, who had the honor of dining with the viceroy at Minia, have each had a squeeze politely administered. One poor devil I know had to make a present of 50 purses. How is my darling Rainy? I do so long for her earnest eyes at times, and I wonder if I shall ever be able to get back to you all again. I fear that breakdown at Sudan sent me down a great terrace. I have never lost the pain and the cough for a day since. I have not been out for an age or seen any one. Would you know the wife of your bosom in a pair of pink trousers and a Turkish tob? Such is my costume as I write. The woman who came to sew could not make a gown, so she made me a pair of trousers instead. Farewell, dearest. I hardly say how your hint of possibly coming has made me wish it, and yet I dread to persuade you. The great heat is quite over with the high Nile, and the air on the river fresh and cool, cold at night even. End of letter 84. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 85 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, off Bulak, August 27, 1866. Dearest Alec, your letter of the 18th has this moment arrived. I am very glad to hear you are so much better. I am still seedy-ish, but no worse. Everybody is liver-sick this year. I give calomel and jalap all round, except to myself. The last two or three days we have been in great tribulation about the boat. On Saturday her ribs were finished, and the planking and caulking ready to be put on, when in the night up came the old Nile with a rush, and threatened to carry her off. But by the favor of Abul Hajjaj and Sheikh el-Bastawi she was saved in this wise. You remember the tall old steersman who went with us to Bedrashane, and whom we thought so ill-conditioned? Well, he was in charge of a dahabiyah close by, and he called up all the ra'ises and steersmen to help. O men of el-Bastawi, this is our boat, i.e. we are the servants of her owner, and she is in our faces. And then he set the example, stripped and carried dust and hammered in piles all night, and by the morning she was surrounded by a dike breast high. The longshoremen of Balak were not a little surprised to see dignified ra'ises working for nothing like fellaheen. Meanwhile my three ma'alimin, the chief builder, caulker, and foreman, had also stayed all night with Omar and my ra'is, who worked like the rest, and the sheikh of all the boat-builders went to visit every one of my ma'alimin, who is his nephew, and hearing the case came down too at 1 in the morning and stayed till dawn. Then, just as the workmen passed, going to their respective jobs, he called to them and said, "Come finish this boat, it must be done by tomorrow night." Some men who objected and said they were going to the Pasha's dockyard got a beating pro forma, and the end of it was that I found 46 men under my boat working like afreets and shaitans when I went to see how all was going in the morning. The old sheikh marked out a piece to each 4 men, and then said, "If that is not done tonight, O dogs, tomorrow I'll put on the hat, i.e. today I have beaten moderately like an Arab, but tomorrow, please God, I'll beat like a Frank and be mad with the stick. Kurz und gut. The boat, which yesterday morning was a skeleton, is now, at 4 p.m. today, finished, caulked, pitched, and all capitally done. If the Nile carries off the dike, she will float safe. The shore is covered with debris of other people's half-finished boats, I believe. I owe the ardor of the ma'alims and of the sheikh of the builders to one of my absurd pieces of Arab civility. On the day when Omar killed poor Abluk, my black sheep, over the bows and straked his blood upon them, the three ma'alimin came on board this boat to eat their dish, and I followed the old Arab fashion and ate out of the wooden dish with them and the ra'is for luck, or rather for a blessing, as we say here, and it seems that this gave immense satisfaction. My ra'is wept at the death of the black sheep, which used to follow him to the coffee-shop and the market, and was to him as a son, he said, but he ate of him nevertheless. Omar surreptitiously picked out the best pieces for my dinner for 3 days, with his usual eye to economy, then lighted a fire of old wood, borrowed a cauldron of some darwishes, cut up the sheep, added water and salt, onions and herbs, and boiled the sheep. Then the big washing copper, a large, round, flat tray like a sponging bath, was filled with bread broken in pieces, over which the broth was slowly poured till the bread was soaked. Next came a layer of boiled rice, On the top of that the pieces of boiled meat, and over all was poured butter, vinegar, and garlic boiled together. This is called feta, and is the orthodox dish of darwishes, and given at all khatmas and other semi-religious, semi-festive, semi-charitable festivals. It is excellent and not expensive. I asked how many had eaten, and was told 130 men had blessed my hand. I expended 160 piastres on bread, butter, vinegar, etc., and the sheep was worth 2 napoleons, 3 napoleons in all, or less, for I ate for 2 days of the mutton. The 3 ma'alims came on board this boat, as I said, and ate, and it was fine to hear us, how polite we were. A bit more, O ma'alim? Praise be to God, we have eaten well. We will return to our work. By the Prophet, coffee and a pipe. Truly thou art of the most noble people. O ma'alim, ye have honored us and rejoiced with us. Verily, this is a day white among days, etc. A very clever Egyptian engineer, a pupil of Whitworth's, who is living in a boat alongside mine, was much amused, and said, Ah, you know how to manage them. I have learnt the story of the 2 dead bodies that hitched in my anchor chain some time ago. They were not Europeans, as I thought, but Circassians, a young man and his mother. The mother used to take him to visit an officer's wife who had been brought up in the harem of the Pasha's mother. The husband caught them, killed them, tied them together and flung them into the Nile near Rota, and gave himself into the hands of the police. All was, of course, hushed up. He goes to Fazoglo, and I don't know what becomes of the slave girl, his wife. These sorts of things happen every day, as the bodies testify, among the Turks, but the Europeans never hear it. I heard it by a curious chance. September 4. My boat will soon be finished, and now will be as good as new. Omar has worked like a good one from daybreak till night, overlooking, buying all the materials, selling all the old wood and iron, etc., and has done capitally. I shall take a paper from my ma'alims, who are all first-class men, to certify what they have done, that the boat is as good as new. Gudda Effendi has kindly looked at her several times for me, and highly approves the work. I never saw men do a better day's work than those at the boat. It is pretty to see the carpenter holding the wood with one hand and one foot while he saws it, sitting on the ground, just like the old frescoes. Do you remember the picture of boat-building in the tomb at Saqqara? Well, it is just the same, all done with the adze, but it is stout work they put into it, I can tell you. If you do not come, and I do not like to press you, I fear the fatigue for you and the return to the cold winter. I shall go to Luxor in a month or so, and send back the boat to let. I have a neighbor now, Gudda Effendi, an engineer, who studied and married in England. His wife is gone there with the children, and he is living in a boat close by, so he comes over of an evening very often, and I am glad of his company. He is a right good fellow and very intelligent. My best love to all at home. I've got a log from the cedars of Lebanon, my Muslim carpenter, who smoothed the broken end, swallowed the sawdust, because he believed Our Lady Mary had sat under the tree with Our Lord Jesus. End of letter 85. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 86 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon. Off Bulak, September 21st, 1866. I am better now, and go on very comfortably with my 2 little boys. Omar is, from dawn till night, at work at my boat, so I have only Mabruk and Achmet, and you would wonder to see how well I am served. Achmet cooks a very good dinner, and serves it, and orders Mabruk about. Sometimes I whistle, and hear, Heder, ready, from the water, and in tumbles Achmet, with the water running down his innocent nose, and looking just like a little bronze triton of a Renaissance fountain, with a blue shirt and white skull-cap added. Mabruk is a big, lubberly lad of the laugh-and-grow-fat breed, clumsy, but not stupid, and very good and docile. You would delight in his guffaws, and the merry games and hearty laughter of my ménage is very pleasant to me. Another boy swims over from Gudda's boat, his Achmet, and then there are games at piracy, and much stealing of red pots from the potter's boats. The joke is to snatch one under the owner's very nose, and swim off brandishing it, whereupon the boatman uses eloquent language, and the boys out-hector him, and everybody is much amused. I only hope Palgrave won't come back from Sukum Kala and fetch Mabrik, just as he has got clever, not at stealing jars, but in his work. He already washes my clothes very nicely indeed. His stout black arms are made for a washerboy. Achmet looked forward with great eagerness to your coming. He is mad to go to England, and in his heart planned to ingratiate himself with you, and go as a general servant. He is very little, if at all, bigger than a child of 7, but an Arab boy, ne doute de rien, and does serve admirably. What would an English respectable cook say to seeing 2 dishes and a suite, cooked over a little old wood on a few bricks, by a baby in a blue shirt? And very well cooked, too, and followed by incomparable coffee. You will be pleased to hear that your capital story of the London cabman has its exact counterpart here. O gracious God, what aileth thee, O Achmet my brother, and why is thy bosom contracted, that thou hast not once said to me, Damn thy father, or son of a dog or pig, as thou art used to do? Can't you save up your holidays, and come for 4 months next winter with my Maurice? However, perhaps you would be bored on the Nile, I don't know. People either enjoy it rapturously, or are bored, I believe. I am glad to hear from Janet that you are well. I am much better. The carpenter will finish in the boat today, then the painter begins, and in a week, inshallah, I shall get back to her. End of letter 86. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 87 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, off Bulak, September 21, 1866. Dearest Mutter, I am a good deal better again. The weather is delightful, and the Nile in full flood, which makes the river scenery from the boat very beautiful. Alec made my mouth water with his description of his rides with Janet about the dear old Surrey country. Having her with him seems to have quite set him up. I have seen nothing and nobody but my next boat neighbor, Gudda Effendi, as Omar has been at work all day in the boat, and I felt lazy and disinclined to go out alone. Big Hassan of the donkeys has grown too lazy to go about, and I don't care to go alone with a small boy here. However, I am out in the best of air all day, and am very well off. My 2 little boys are very diverting and serve me very well. The news from Europe is, to my ignorant ideas, désolant, a dégringolade back into military despotism, which would have excited indignation with us in our father's days, I think. I get lots of newspapers from Ross, which afterwards go to an Arab grocer, who reads the Times and the Saturday Review in his shop in the bazaar. What next? The cargo of books which Alec and you sent will be most acceptable for winter consumption. If I were a painter, I would take up the Muslim traditions of Mary and Joseph. He was not a white-bearded old gentleman at all, you must know, but young, lovely, and pure as Our Lady herself. They were cousins, brought up together, and she avoided the light conversation of other girls, and used to go to the well with her jar, hand in hand with Joseph carrying his. After the angel Gabriel had announced to her the will of God, and blown into her sleeve, whereby she conceived the Spirit of God, Joseph saw her state with dismay, and resolved to kill her, as was his duty as her nearest male relation. He followed her, knife in hand, meaning always to kill her at the next tree, and each time his heart failed him, until they reached the well and the tree under which the divine messenger stood once more and said, Fear not, O Joseph, the daughter of thy uncle bears within her Isa, the Messiah, the Spirit of God. Joseph married his cousin without fear. Is it not pretty? 2 types of youthful purity and piety, standing hand in hand before the angel. I think a painter might make something out of the soft-eyed Syrian boy with his jar on his shoulder, hers on the head, and the grave, modest maiden who shrank from all profane company. I now know all about Sheikh Salim, and why he sits naked on the river bank, from a very high authority, a great sheikh to whom it has been revealed. He was entrusted with the care of some of the holy she-camels, like that on which the Prophet rode to Jerusalem in one night, and which are invisible to all but the elect, and he lost one, and now he is God's prisoner till she is found. A letter from Aunt Charlie, all about her own and Rainey's country life, school feasts, etc., made me quite cry, and brought before me, oh, how vividly, the difference between East and West, not quite all to the advantage of home, however, though mostly. What is pleasant here is the primitive ways. Three times since I have been here, lads of most respectable families of Luxor have come to ask hospitality, which consists in a place on the deck of the boat, and liberty to dip their bread in the common dish with my slave boy and Achmet. The bread they brought with them, bread and shelter, were not asked, as they slept sub dio. In England I must have refused the hospitality, on account of Jean and expense. The chief object to the lads was the respectability of being under my eye while away from their fathers, as a satisfaction to their families, and while they ate and slept like beggars, as we should say, they read their books and chatted with me, while I was out on deck, on perfectly equal terms, only paying the respect proper to my age. I thought of the orphanages and institutions, and all the countless difficulties of that sort, and wondered whether something was not to be said for this absence of civilization in knives, forks, beds, beer, and first and second tables above all. Of course climate has a good deal to do with the facility with which widows and orphans are absorbed here. Goodbye, dearest mother. Today is post-day, and Rais Mohammed is about to trudge into town in such a darling white turban and such a grand black robe. His first wife, whom he was going to divorce for want of children, has brought him a son, and we jeer him a little about what he may find in Luxor from the second, and wish him a couple of dozen. End of letter 87. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 88 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Cairo, October 15, 1866. Dearest Alec, I have been back in my own boat 4 days, and most comfortable she is. I enlarged the saloon, and made a good writing-table, and low, easy divans instead of benches, and added a sort of pantry and sleeping-cabin in front, so that Omar has not to come through the saloon to sleep, and I have all the harem part to myself. Inside there is a good large stern-cabin, and wash-closet, and 2 small cabins with beds, long enough even for you. Inshallah, you and Maurice will come next winter and go up the Nile and enjoy it with me. I intend to sail in 10 days and to send back the Urania to seek work for the winter. We had a very narrow escape of being flooded this year. I fear a good deal of damage has been done to the dhurra and cotton crops. It was sad to see the villagers close by here trying to pull up a little green dhurra as the Nile slowly swallowed up the fields. I was forced to flog Maybrick yesterday for smoking on the sly, a grave offence here on the part of a boy. It is considered disrespectful, so he was ordered, with much parade, to lie down, and Omar gave him 2 cuts with a rope's end, an apology for a flogging which would have made an Eton boy stare. The stick here is quite nominal, except in official hands. I can't say Maybrick seemed at all impressed, for he was laughing heartily with Omar in less than 10 minutes, but the affair was conducted with as much solemnity as an execution. Sheikh Stanley's friend, Gezawi, has married his negro slave to his own sister, on the plea that he was the best young man he knew. What would a Christian family say to such an arrangement? My boat is beautifully buoyant now, and has come up by the bows in fine style. I have not sailed her yet, but have no doubt she will walk well, as the Arabs say. Omar got £10 by the sale of old wood and nails, and also gave me 2,000 piastres, nearly £12, which the workmen had given him as a sort of bakshish. They all pay 1, 2, or 3 piastres daily to any wakil, agent, who superintends. That is his profit, and it is enormous at that rate. I said, "Why did you not refuse it?" But Omar replied they had pay enough after that reduction, which is always made from them, and that, in his opinion, therefore, it came out of the master's pocket, and was cheatery. How people have been talking nonsense about Jamaica chez vous! I have little doubt Eyre did quite right, and still less doubt that the niggers have had enough of the sort of provocation which I well know to account for the outbreak. Baker's effusion is a poor business. There may be blacks like tigers, and whites, too, in London, for that matter. I myself have seen at least 5 sorts of blacks, negroes, not Arabs, more unlike each other than Swedes are unlike Spaniards, and many are just like ourselves. Of course they want governing with a strong hand, like all ignorant, childish creatures, but I am fully convinced that custom and education are the only real differences between one set of men and another. Their inner nature is all the same the world over. My Rais spoke a pretty parable the other day, that I must needs write it. A Coptic Rais stole some of my wood, which we got back by force, and there was some reviling of the Nazarenes in consequence from Hussein and Ali. But Rais Mohammed said, "Not so. Girgis is a thief, it is true, but many Christians are honest, and behold, all the people in the world are like soldiers. Some wear red and some blue, some serve on foot, others on horseback, and some in ships. But all serve one sultan, and each fights in the regiment in which the sultan has placed him, and he who does his duty best is the best man, be his coat red or blue or black." I said, "Excellent words, O Rais, and fit to be spoken from the best of pulpits. It is surprising what happy sayings the people here hit upon. They cultivate talk for want of reading, and the consequence is great facility of narration and illustration. Everybody enforces his ideas like Christ in parables. Haji Hanna told me two excellent fairy tales, which I will write for Rainey with some balderizing, and several laughable stories, which I will leave unrecorded, as savoring too much of Boccaccio's manner, or that of the Queen of the Navarre. I told Achmet to sweep the floor after dinner just now. He hesitated, and I called him again, 'What manner is this, not to sweep when I bid thee?' 'By the Most High God,' said the boy, 'my hand shall not sweep in thy boat after sunset, O lady. I would rather have it cut off than sweep thee out of thy property.' I found that you must not sweep at night, nor for 3 days after the departure of a guest whose return you desire, or the master of the house. Thinkest thou that my brother would sweep away the dust of thy feet from the floors at Luxor?" continued Achmet. "He would fear never to see thy fortunate face again. If you don't want to see your visitor again, you break a gullah, water jar, behind him as he leaves the house, and sweep away his footsteps. What a canard your papers have in Europe about a constitution here! I don't write any politics, it is all too dreary, and Cairo gossip is odious, as you may judge by the productions of Madame Odard and Lot. Only remember this, there is no law nor justice but the will, or rather the caprice, of one man. It is nearly impossible for any European to conceive such a state of things as really exists. Nothing but perfect familiarity with the governed, i.e. oppressed, class will teach it. However intimate a man may be with the rulers, he will never fully take it in. I am a Londox here, and none of the people I know dare to come see me, Arab, I mean." It was whispered in my ear in the street by a friend I met. Ismail Pasha's chief pleasure is gossip, and a certain number of persons, chiefly Europeans, furnish him with it daily, true or false. If the farce of the Constitution ever should be acted here, it will be superb. Something like the consul going in state to ask the fellaheen what wages they got. I could tell you a little of the value of consular information, but what is the use? Europe is enchanted with the enlightened Pasha who has ruined this fine country. I long to see you in Rainey. I don't like to hope too much, but inshallah next year I shall see you all." End of letter 88. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 89 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, off Bulak, October 19, 1866. I shall soon sail up the river. Yesterday Said Mustafa arrived, who says that the Greeks are all gone, and the poor Austrian at Thebes is dead, so I shall represent Europe in my single person from Siout to, I suppose, Khartoum. You would delight in Maybrook. A man asked him the other day, after his flogging, if he would not run away, to see what he would say, as alleged, I suspect he meant to steal and sell him. I run away, to eat lentils like you, when my effendi gives me meat and bread every day, and I eat such a lot? Is not that a delicious, practical view of liberty? The creature's enjoyment of life is quite a pleasure to witness, and he really works very well and with great alacrity. If Palgrave claims him, I think I must buy him. I hear sad accounts from the Said. The new taxes and the new levies of soldiers are driving the people to despair, and many are running away from the land, which will no longer feed them after paying all exactions, to join the Bedouin in the desert, which is just as if our peasantry churned gypsies. A man from Dishne visited me. The people there want me to settle in their village, and offer me a voluntary corvée if I will buy land. So many men to work for me 2 days a month each. I haven't a conception why. It is a place about 50 miles below Luxor, a large agricultural village. Omar's wife, Mebruka, came here yesterday, a nice young woman, and the babies are fine children and very sweet-tempered. She told me that the lion's head, which I sent down to Alexandria to go to you, was in her room when a neighbor of hers, who had never had a child, saw it, and at once conceived. The old image worship survives in the belief, which is all over Egypt, that the antiquities, can cure barrenness. Mebruka was, of course, very smartly dressed, and the reckless way in which Eastern women treat their fine clothes gives them a grand air, which no Parisian duchess could hope to imitate. Not that I think it a virtue, mind you, but some vices are genteel. Last night was a great sheikh's fete, such drumming and singing and ferrying across the river. The Nile is running down unusually fast, and I think I'd better go soon, as the mud of Cairo is not so sweet as the mud of the upper land. End of letter 89. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 90 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, off Bulak, October 25, 1866. Dearest Mutter, I have got all ready and shall sail on Saturday. My men have baked the bread and received their wages to go to Luxor and bring the boat back to let. It is turning cold, but I feel none the worse for it, though I shall be glad to go. I've had a dreary, worrying time here, and am tired of hearing all the meanness and wickedness which constitute the on dit here. Not that I hear much, but there is nothing else. I shall be best at Luxor now the winter has set in so early. You would laugh at such winter when one sits out all day under an awning in English summer clothes, and wants only two blankets at night, but all is comparative ici-bas, and I call it cold, and Maybrook ceases to consider his clothes such a grievance as they were to him at first, and takes kindly to a rough capote for the night. I have just been interrupted by my Rais and one of my men, who came in to display the gorgeous printed calico they have bought, one for his Luxor wife and the other for his betrothed up near Aswan. The latter is about 8 years old, and Hussein has dressed her and paid her expenses these 5 years, as is the custom up in that district. The Rais has bought a silk handkerchief for 9 shillings, but that was in the marriage contract. So I must see and admire and wish good luck to the finery and to the girls who are to wear it. Then we had a little talk about the prospects of letting the boat, and, inshallah, making some money for El Gama, i.e. all our company or all of us together. The Rais hopes that the Hagawat will not be too outrageous in their ways or given to use the stick, as the solution of every difficulty. The young Sharufa of Abul Hajjaj came from Gamal Azhar today to bid me good-bye and bring their letters for Luxor. I asked them about the rumors that the Ulema are preaching against the Franks, which is always being said, but they had heard nothing of the sort, and said they had not heard of anything the Franks had done lately which would signify to the Muslims at all. It is not the Franks who press so many soldiers, or levy such heavy taxes 3 months in advance. I will soon write again. I feel rather like the wandering Jew and long for home and rest, without being dissatisfied with what I have and enjoy, God knows, if I could get better and come home next summer. End of letter 90. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 91 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, November 21, 1866. Dearest Alec, I arrived here on the morning of the 11th. I am a beast not to have written, but I caught cold after 4 days, and have really not been well, so forgive me, and I will narrate and not apologize. We came up best pace, as the boat is a flyer now, only 14 days to Thebes, and to Kenna only 11. Then we had bad winds, and my men pulled away at the rope, and sang the Rais al-Rusa, bridegroom, going to his bride, and even Omar went and pulled the rope. We were all very merry, and played practical jokes on a rascal who wanted a pound to guide me to the tombs. We made him run miles, fetch innumerable donkeys, and then laughed at his beard. Such is boatman fun. On arriving at Luxor, I had a charivari of voices, and I knew I was at home, by the shrill pipe of the little children, El Sit, El Sit. Visitors all day, of course. At night comes up another dahabiyya. Great commotion, as it had been telegraphed from Cairo, which I knew before I left, and was to be stopped. So I coolly said, O Mustafa, the Indian saint, Wali, is in thine eye, seeing that an Indian is all as one with an Englishman. How did I know there was an Indian and a Wali, etc.? Meanwhile, the Wali had a bad thumb, and someone told his slave there was a wonderful English doctress. So in the morning he sent for me, and I went inside the harem. He was very friendly, and made me sit close beside him, told me he was fourth in descent from Abd el-Qadir Gilami of Baghdad, but his father settled at Hyderabad, where he has great estates. He said he was a Wali, or saint, and would have it that I was on the path of the Darwishes, gave me medicine for my cough, asked me many questions, and finally gave me $5 and asked if I wanted more. I thanked him heartily, kissed the money politely, and told him I was not poor enough to want it, and would give it in his name to the poor of Luxor, but that I would never forget that the Indian sheikh had behaved like a brother to an Englishwoman in a strange land. He then spoke in great praise of the laws of the English, and said many more kind things to me, adding again, I tell thee thou art a darwish, and do not forget me. Another Indian from Lahore, I believe the sheikh's tailor, came to see me, an intelligent man, and a Syrian doctor, a manifest scamp. The people here said he was Balawar, rope-dancer. Well, the authorities detained the boat with fair words till orders came from Kenna to let them go up further. Meanwhile the sheikh came out and performed some miracles, which I was not there to see, perfuming people's hands by touching them with his, and taking English sovereigns out of a pocketless jacket, and the doctor told wonders of him. Anyhow, he spent £10 in one day here, and he is a regular darwish. He and all the harem were poorly dressed, and wore no ornaments whatever. I hope Sayyid Abdurrahman will come down safe again, but no one knows what the government wants of him, or why he is so watched. It is the first time I ever saw an Oriental travelling for pleasure. He had about 10 or 12 in the harem, among them his 3 little girls, and perhaps 20 men outside, Indians and Arabs from Syria, I fancy. Next day I moved into the old house, and found one end in ruins, owing to the high Nile and want of repair. However, there is plenty more safe and comfortable. I settled all accounts with my men, and made an inventory in Arabic, which Sheikh Yusuf wrote for me, which we laughed over hugely. How to express a sauce-boat, a pie-dish, etc., in Arabic was a poser. A genteel effendi who sat by at last burst out in uncontrollable amazement, "There is no God but God! Is it possible that 4 or 5 francs can use all these things to eat, drink, and sleep on a journey?" N.B. I fear the francs will think the stock very scanty. Whereupon Master Achmet, with the swagger of one who has seen cities and men, held forth, "Oh, effendim, that is nothing. Our lady is almost like the children of the Arabs. One dish or two, a piece of bread, a few dates, and peace, as we say, there is an end of it. But thou shouldst see the merchants of Escandaria, Alexandria, 3 tablecloths, 40 dishes, to each soul 7 plates of all sorts, 7 knives and 7 forks and 7 spoons, large and small, and 7 different glasses for wine and beer and water." "It is the will of God," replied the effendi, rather put down. "But," he added, "it must be a dreadful fatigue to them to eat their dinner." Then came an impudent merchant who wanted to go down with his bales and 5 souls in my boat for nothing. But I said, "O man, she is my property, and I will eat from her of thy money as of the money of the Franks." Whereupon he offered £1, but was bundled out amid general reproaches for his avarice and want of shame. So all the company set a fatah for the success of the voyage, and Rais Mohammed was extorted to open his eyes, and he should have a tarbush if he did well. Then I went to visit my kind friend the Maun's wife, and tell her all about her charming daughter and grandchildren. I was, of course, an hour in the street salaaming, etc. "Sharaftina Belidna, thou hast honored our country on all sides. Blessings come with thee," etc. Everything is cheaper than last year, but there is no money to buy with, and the taxes have grown beyond bearing, as a fellow said, "A man can't, we will express it, blow his nose, if you please, the real phrase was less parliamentary, and expressive of something at once ventos and valueless, without a kawas behind him to levy a tax on it. The ha'porth of onions we buy in the market is taxed on the spot, and the fish which the man catches under my window. I paid a tax on buying charcoal, and another on having it weighed. People are terribly beaten to get next year's taxes out of them, which they have not the money to pay. The Nubian MPs passed the other day in three boats, towed by a steamer, very frightened and sullen. I fell in with some Egyptians on my way, and tried to talk the European style of talk. Now you will help to govern the country, what a fine thing for you, etc. I got such a look of rueful reproach. Laugh not thou at our beards, O Effendim. God's mercy, what words are these? And who is there on the banks of the Nile who can say anything but Hydir, ready, with both hands on the head, and a salaam to the ground even to a mutter, and thou talkest of speaking before Effendina? Art thou mad, Effendim? Of all the vexations, none are more trying than the distinctions which have been inflicted on the unlucky Sheikhs el-Beled. In fear and trembling they ate their Effendina's banquet, and sadly paid the bill, and those who have had the Nishan, the order of the Majidi, have had to disburse fees, whereat the Lord Chamberlain's staff's mouths might water, and now the wretched delegates to the European chambers, God save the mark, are going down with their hearts in their shoes. The Nubians say that the divan is to be held in the citadel, and that the road by which the Memluk Beys left it is not stopped up, though perhaps it goes underground nowadays. November 27th. The first steamer full of travellers has just arrived, and with it the brother of the ladies, all wanting my saddle. I forbade Mustafa to send for it, but they intimidate the poor old fellow, and he comes and kisses my hand, not to get him into trouble with one old woman, who says she is the relation of a consul and a great lady in her own country. I am what Mrs. Grote called cake enough to concede to Mustafa's fears what I had sworn to refuse henceforth. Last year five women on one steamer all sent for my saddle, besides other things, camp stools, umbrellas, beer, etc., etc. This year I'll bolt the doors when I see a steamer coming. I hear the big people are so angry with the Indian saint because he treated them like dirt everywhere. One great man went with a mudir to see him, and asked him to sell him a memluk, a young slave boy. The Indian, who had not spoken or saluted, burst forth, "Be silent, thou wicked one! Dost thou dare to ask me to sell thee a soul to take it with thee to hell?" Fancy the surprise of the distinguished Turk. Never had he heard such language. The story has travelled all up the river, and is, of course, much enjoyed. Last night Sheikh Yusuf gave an entertainment, killed a sheep, and had a reading of the Sirat el-Rasur, chapter on the Prophet. It was the night of the Prophet's great vision, and is a great night in Islam. I was sorry not to be well enough to go. Now that there is no Qadi here, Sheikh Yusuf has lots of business to settle, and he came to me and said, "Expound to me the laws of marriage and inheritance of the Christians, that I may do no wrong in the affairs of the Copts, for they won't go and be settled by the priest out of the Gospels, and I can't find any laws, except about marriage, in the Gospels." I set him up with the text of the tribute money, and told him to judge according to his own laws, for that Christians had no laws other than those of the country they lived in. Poor Yusuf was sore perplexed about a divorce case. I refused to expound, and told him all the learned in the law in England had not yet settled which text to follow. Do you remember the German story of the lad who travelled das Gruseln zu lernen? Well, I, who never gruselt before, had a touch of it a few evenings ago. I was sitting here quietly drinking tea, and four or five men were present, when a cat came to the door. I called, "Bis, bis," and offered milk, but Pussy, after looking at us, ran away. "Well dost thou, O lady," said a quiet, sensible man, a merchant here, "to be kind to the cat, for I dare say he gets little enough at home. His father, poor man, cannot cook for his children every day." And then, in an explanatory tone to the company, "That is Ali Nasseri's boy Yusuf. It must be Yusuf, because his fellow-twin Ismail is with his mule at Negeta." Mir Gruselta, I confess, not but what I have heard things almost as absurd from gentlemen and ladies in Europe, but an extravagance in a kuftan has quite a different effect from one in a tailcoat. "What, my butcher's boy who brings the meat? A cat?" I gasped. "To be sure, and he knows well where to look for a bit of good cookery, you see. All twins go out as cats at night if they go to sleep hungry, and their own bodies lie at home, like dead, meanwhile, but no one must touch them, or they would die. When they grow up to 10 or 12, they leave it off. Why, your boy Achmet does it. Oh, Achmet, do you go out as a cat at night?
No, said Achmet tranquilly, I am not a twin. My sister's sons do.
I inquired if people were not afraid of such cats.
No, there is no fear. They only eat a little of the cookery, but if you beat them, they will tell their parents next day, so-and-so beat me in his house last night, and show their bruises.
No, they are not afreets. They are Beni Adam, sons of Adam. Only twins do it, and if you give them a sort of onion broth and camel's milk the first thing when they are born, they don't do it at all.
Omar professed never to have heard of it, but I am sure he had, only he dreads being laughed at.
One of the American missionaries told me something like it, as belonging to the Copts, but it is entirely Egyptian and common to both religions. I asked several Copts who assured me it was true, and told just the same.
Is it a remnant of the doctrine of transmigration?
However, the notion fully accounts for the horror people feel at the idea of killing a cat.
A poor pilgrim from the Black Country was taken ill yesterday at a village 6 miles from here. He could speak only a few words of Arabic and begged to be carried to the Ababda. So the Sheikh el-Beled put him on a donkey and sent him and his little boy and laid him in Sheikh Hassan's house. He called for Hassan and begged him to take care of the child and to send him to an uncle somewhere in Cairo. Hassan said, "Oh, you will get well, inshallah, etc., and take the boy with you."
"I cannot take him into the grave with me," said the black pilgrim.
Well, in the night he died, and the boy went to Hassan's mat and said, "Oh, Hassan, my father is dead." So the two sheikhs and several men got up and went and sat with the boy till dawn, because he refused to lie down or to leave his father's corpse. At daybreak he said, "Take me now and sell me, and buy new cloth to dress my father for the tomb." All the Ababda cried when they heard it, and Hassan went and bought the cloth, and some sweet stuff for the boy who remains with him. Such is death on the road in Egypt. I tell it as Hassan's slave told it to me, and somehow we all cried again at the poor little boy rising from his dead father's side to say, "Come now, sell me to dress my father for the tomb." These strange black pilgrims always interest me. Many take 4 years to Mecca and home, and have children born to them on the road, and learn a few words of Arabic. End of letter 91. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 92 of Letters from Egypt. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Ross, Luxor, December 5th, 1866. Dearest Janet, I write in answer to yours by the steamer to go down by the Seine. I fancy I should be quite of your mind about Italy. I hate the return of Europe to the good old rule and ancient plan that he should take who has the power, and he should keep who can. Nor can I be bullied into looking on might as right. Many thanks for the papers. I am anxious to hear about the Candia business. All my neighbors are sick at heart. The black boy Palgrave left with me is a very good lad, only he can't keep his clothes clean, never having been subject to that annoyance before. He has begun to be affectionate ever since I did not beat him for breaking my only looking-glass. I wish an absurd respect for public opinion did not compel him to wear a blue shirt and a tarbouche, his suit. I see it is misery to him. He is a very gentle cannibal. I have been very unwell indeed, and still am extremely weak, but hope I am on the mend. A eunuch here who is a holy man tells me he saw my boat coming up heavily laden in his sleep, which indicates a good let. I hope my reverend friend is right. If you sell any of your things when you leave Egypt, let me have some blankets for the boat. If she is let to a friendly dragoman, he will supply all deficiencies out of his own canteen. But, if to one who knows not Joseph, I fear many things will be demanded by right-minded British travelers, which must be left to the Rais's discretion to buy for them. I hope all the fatah said for the success of the Urania's voyage will produce a due effect. Here we rely a good deal on the favor of Abul Hajjaj in such matters. The naivete with which people pray here for money is very amusing, though really I don't know why one shouldn't ask for one's daily sixpence as well as one's daily bread. An idiot of a woman has written me to get her a place as governess in an European or Arabian family in the neighborhood of Thebes. Considering she has been 6 years in Egypt, as she says, she must be well fitted to teach. She had better learn to make gilla and spin wool. The young Americans whom Mr. Hale sent were very nice. The Yankees are always the best bred and educated travelers that I see here. End of letter 92. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 93 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, December 31st, 1866. Dearest Alec, I meant to have sent you a long yarn by a steamer which went the other day, but I have been in my bed. The weather set in colder than I ever felt it here, and I have been very unwell for some time. Dr. Osman Ibrahim, a friend of mine, an elderly man who studied in Paris in Muhammad Ali's time, wants me to spend the summer up here and take sand baths, i.e. bury myself up to the chin in the hot sand, and to get a Dongola slave to rub me. A most fascinating derwish from Esna gave me the same advice. He wanted me to go and live near him at Esna, and let him treat me. I wish you could see Sheikh Salim. He is a sort of remnant of the Memluk Beys, a Circassian who has inherited his master's property up at Esna, and married his master's daughter. The master was one of the Beys, also a slave inheriting from his master. Well, after being a terrible shaitan after drink, women, etc., Salim has repented and become a man of pilgrimage and prayer and perpetual fasting, but he has retained the exquisite grace and charm of manner, which must have made him irresistible in his shaitan days, and also the beautifully delicate style of dress, a dove-colored cloth siba over a pale blue silk kaftan, a turban like a snowdrift, under which flowed the silky fair hair and beard, and the dainty white hands under the long muslin shirt-sleeve made a picture, and such a smile, and such ready graceful talk. Sheikh Yusuf brought him to me as a sort of doctor, and also to try and convert me on one point. Some Christians had made Yusuf quite miserable, by telling him of the doctrine that all unbaptized infants went to eternal fire, and, as he knew that I had lost a child very young, it weighed on his mind that perhaps I fretted about this, and so he could not refrain from trying to convince me that God was not so cruel and unjust as the Nazarene priests represented him, and that all infants whatsoever, as well as ignorant persons, were to be saved. Would that I could take the cruel error out of the minds of all the hundreds and thousands of poor Christian mothers who must be tortured by it, said he, and let them understand that their dead babies are with him who sent and took them. I own I did not resent this interference with my orthodoxy, especially as it is the only one I ever knew Yusuf to attempt. Dr. Osman is a lecturer in the Cairo School of Medicine, a sharif, and eminently a gentleman. He came up in the passenger steamer and called on me and spent all his spare time with me. I liked him better than the bewitching derwish Salim. He is so like my old love, Don Quixote. He was amazed and delighted at what he heard here about me. Ah, madame, on vous aime comme une sœur, et on vous respecte comme une reine, cela rejoute la cour des honnêtes gens de voir tous les préjugés oubliés et détruits à ce point. We had no end of talk. Osman is the only Arab I know who has read a good deal of European literature and history, and is able to draw comparisons. He said, Vous seul dans toute l'Égypte connaissez le peuple et comprenez ce qui s'y passe. Tous les autres Européens ne savent absolument rien que les héros. Il n'y a que vous qui ayez inspiré la confiance qu'il faut pour connaître la vérité.
Of course, this is between ourselves, I tell you, but I don't want to boast of the kind thoughts people have of me, simply because I am decently civil to them. In Egypt we are eaten up with taxes. There is not a penny left to any one. The taxes for the whole year, 8 months in advance, have been levied, as far as they can be beaten out of the miserable people. I saw one of the poor dancing girls the other day. There are three in Luxor, and she told me how cruel the new tax on them is. It is left to the discretion of the official who farms it
to make each woman pay according to her presumed gains, i.e. her good looks, and thus the poor women are exposed to all the caprices and extortions of the police. This last new tax has excited more disgust than any. "We now know the name of our ruler," said a fellow who had just heard of it. "He is Mawash Pasha. I won't translate, but it is a terrible epithet when uttered in a tone which gives it the true meaning, though in a general way the commonest word of abuse to a donkey or a boy or to any other cattle. The wages of prostitution are unclean, and this tax renders all government salaries unlawful according to strict law. The capitation tax, too, which was remitted for 3 years on the Pasha's accession to the people of Cairo, Alexandria, Damietta, and Rashid, is now called for. Omar will have to pay about £8 back tax, which he had fondly imagined himself excused from. You may conceive the distress this must cause among artisans, etc., who have spent their money and forgotten it, and feel cheated out of the blessings they then bestowed on the Pasha. As to that, they will take out the change in curses. There was a meeting here the other day of the Qadi, Sheikh el-Belid, and other notables to fix the amount of tax each man was to pay towards the increased police tax, and the old Sharif at the end spoke up and said he had heard that one man had asked me to lend him money, and that he hoped such a thing would not happen again. Everyone knew I had heavy expenses this year, and most likely had not much money, that my heart was soft, and that as everyone was in distress it would be breaking my head, and in short, that he should think it unmanly if anyone tried to trouble a lone woman with his troubles. I did offer one man £2 that he might not be forced to run away to the desert, but he refused it, and said, "I had better go at once and rob out there, and not turn rogue against thee. Never could I repay it. The people are running away in all directions." When the mulid of the sheikh came, the whole family Abul Hajjaj could only raise 620 piastres among them to buy the buffalo cow, which by custom, strong as the laws of the Medes and Persians, must be killed for the strangers who come, and a buffalo cow is worth 1,000 piastres. So the stout old Sharif, aged 87, took his staff and the 620 piastres, and sallied forth to walk to Erment and see what God would send them, and a charitable woman in Erment did give a buffalo cow for the 620 piastres, and he drove her home the 20 miles, rejoicing. There has been a burglary over at Gerna, an unheard-of event. Some men broke into the house of the Coptic Gabit, tax-gatherer, and stole the money-box containing about 60 purses, over £150. The Gabit came to me sick with the fright which gave him jaundice, and about 8 men are gone in chains to Kenna on suspicion. Haji Baba, too, a Turkish kawas, is awfully bilious. He says he is sick from beating men, and it's no use. You can't coin money on their backs and feet when they haven't a para in the world. Altogether, everyone is gloomy, and many desperate. I never saw the aspect of a population so changed. January 1, 1867. God bless you, dearest Alec, and grant you many good years more. I must finish this to go tomorrow by the steamer. I would give a great deal to see you again, but when will that be? End of letter 93, read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 94 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, January 12, 1867. Dearest Alec, only 2 days ago I received letters from you of the 17th September and the 19th November. I wonder how many get lost and where. Janet gives me hopes of a visit of a few days in March and promises me a little terrier dog, whereat Omar is in raptures. I have made no plans at all, never having felt well enough to hope to be able to travel. The weather has changed for the better, and it is not at all cold now. We shall see what the warmth does for me. You make my bowels yearn with your account of Rainy. If only we had Prince Ahmet's carpet, and you could all come here for a few months. We were greatly excited here last week. A boy was shot out in the sugar-cane field. He was with 4 Copts, and at first it looked ugly for the Copts. But the Maon tells me he is convinced they are innocent, and that they only prevaricated from fear. It was robbers that shot the poor child. What stuck and surprised me in the affair was the excessive horror and consternation it produced. that Mahon had not had a murder in his district at all in 8 years. The marketplace was thronged with wailing women, Omar was sick all day, and the Mahon pale and wretched. The horror of killing seems greater here than I ever saw it. Palgrave says the same of the Arabian Arabs in his book. It is not one's notion of Oriental feeling, but a murder in England is taken quite as a joke compared with the scene here. I fear there will be robberies, owing to the distress, and the numbers who are running away from the land unable to pay their taxes. Don't fear for me, for I have two watchmen in the house every night, the regular guard and an amateur, a man whose boy I took down to Cairo to study in Gamal Asar. Palgrave has written to Ross wanting Mabrook back. I am very sorry, the more so as Mabrook is recalcitrant. I want to stay with thee, I don't want to go back to the Nazarene. A boy who heard him said, But the lady is a Nazarene too, whereupon Mabrook slapped his face with great vigor. He will be troublesome if he does turn restive, and he is one who can only be managed by kindness. He is as good and quiet as possible with us, but the stubborn will is there, and he is too ignorant to be reasoned with. January 14th. Today the four Copts have again changed their story, and after swearing that the robbers were strangers, have accused a man who has shot birds for me all this winter, and the poor devil is gone to Kenna in chains. The weather seems to have set in steadily for fine. I hope soon to get out, but my donkey has grown old and shaky, and I am too weak to walk, so I sit in the balcony. End of letter 94, read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 95 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, Luxor, January 14, 1867. Dearest Mother, We have had a very cold winter, and I have been constantly ailing. Luckily, the cuff has transferred itself from the night to the day, and I get some good sleep. The last 2 days have been much warmer, and I hope matters will mend. I am beginning to take cod liver oil, as we can't find a milch camel anywhere. My boat has been well let in Cairo and is expected here every day. The gentlemen shoot and tell the crew not to row, and in short take it easy, and give them £2 in every place. Imagine what luxury for my crew. I shall have to dismiss the lot, they will be so spoiled. The English Consul General came up in a steamer with Dr. Patterson and Mr. Francis. I dined with them one day. I wish you could have seen me carried in my armchair high up on the shoulders of four men, like a successful candidate, or more like one of the pharaohs in an ancient bas-relief, preceded by torch-bearers and other attendants and followers. My procession was quite regal. I wish I could show you a new friend of mine, Osman Ibrahim, who studied medicine 5 years in Paris. My heart warmed to him directly, because, like most high-bred Arabs, he is so like Don Quixote, only Don Quixote quite in his senses. The sort of innocent sententiousness and perfectly natural love of fine language and fine sentiments is unattainable to any European, except, I suppose, a Spaniard. It is quite unlike Italian fustian or French sentiment. I suppose to most Europeans it is ridiculous, but I used to cry when the carriers beat the most noble of all knights when I was a little girl and read Don Quixote, and now I feel, as it were, like Sancho, when I listen to Osman reciting bits of heroic poetry, or uttering wise saws and modern instances, with the peculiar mixture of strong sense of exultation which stamps the great Don. I may not repeat all I heard from him of the state of things here, and the insults he had to endure, a sharif and an educated man, from coarse Turkish pashas. It was the carriers over again. He told me he had often cried like a woman, at night in his own room, at the miseries he was forced to witness and could do nothing to relieve. All the men I have particularly liked, I find, are more or less pupils of the Sheikh El Baghouri, now dead, who seems to have had the gift of inspiring honorable feeling. Our good Mahon is one. He is no conjurer, but the honesty and goodness are heroic, which lead a man to starve on £15 a month, when he is expected to grow rich on plunder. The war in Crete saddens many a household here. Sheikh Yusuf's brother, Sheikh Yuris, is serving there, and many more. People are actually beginning to say, We hope the English and French won't fight for the Sultan if the Muscovites want to eat him. There will be no good for us till the Turks are driven out. All the old religious devotion to the Sultan seems quite gone. Poor Mustafa has been very unwell, and I stopped his Ramadan, gave him some physic, and ordered him not to fast, for which I think he is rather grateful. The Imam and Mufti always endorse my prohibitions of fasting to my patients. Old Ishmael is dead, aged over 100. He served Belzoni, and when he grew doting was always wanting me to go with him to join Belzoni at Abu Simbel. He was not at all ill, he only went out like a candle. His grandson brought me a bit of the meat cooked at his funeral and begged me to eat it, that I might live to be very old, according to the superstition here. When they killed the buffalo for the Sheikh Abul Hajjaj, the man who had a right to the feet kindly gave them to Omar, who wanted to make calf's foot jelly for me. I had a sort of profane feeling, as if I were eating a descendant of the bull Aphis. I am reading Madame du Deffand's letters. What a repulsive picture of a woman! I don't know which I dislike most, Horace Walpole or herself. The conflict of selfishness, vanity, and ennui, disguised as sentiment, is quite hateful. To her Turgot was un seul animal, so much for her great gifts. Remember me kindly to William, and tell him how much I wish I could see his improvements. Omar also desires his salam to him, having a sort of fellow-feeling for your faithful henchman. I need not say he kisses your hand most dutifully. End of letter 95. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 96 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, January 22, 1867. Dearest Alec, the weather has been lovely for the last week, and I am therefore somewhat better. My boat arrived today with all the men in high good humor, and Omar tells me all is in good order, only the people in Cairo gave her the evil eye, and broke the iron part of the rudder which had to be repaired at Beni Suef. Mr. Lear has been here the last few days, and is just going up to the second cataract. He has done a little drawing of my house for you, a new view of it. He is a pleasant man, and I was glad to see him. Such a queer fellow came here the other day, a tall, stalwart Holsteiner, I should think a man of 50, who has been 4 years up in the Sudan and Sennar, and being penniless, had walked all through Nubia begging his way. He was not the least down upon his luck, and spoke with enthusiasm of the hospitality and kindness of Sir Samuel Baker's tigers. Ja, das sind direkten Kerls, das ist das glücke Kleven. His account is that if you go with an armed party, the blacks naturally show fight, as men with guns, in their eyes, are always slave hunters, but if you go alone and poor, they kill an ox for you, unless you prefer a sheep, give you a hut, and generally anything they have to offer. Marisi, beer, to make you as drunk as a lord, and young ladies to pour it out for you, and you need not wear any clothes. If you had heard him, you would have started for the interior at once. I gave him a dinner and a bottle of common wine, which he emptied, and a few shillings, and away he trudged merrily towards Cairo. I wonder what the Nubians thought of a Hagawa begging. He said they were all kind, and that he was sure he often ate what they pinched themselves to give, dura bread and dates. In the evening we were talking about this man's stories, and of anthropophagi and men whose heads do grow to a prodigious height, by means of an edifice woven of their own hair, and other queer things, when Hassan told me a story which pleased me particularly. My father, said he, Sheikh Mohammed, who was a taller and handsomer man than I am, was travelling very far up in the black country, and he and the men he was with had very little to eat, and had killed nothing for many days. Presently they heard a sort of wailing from a hole in the rock, and some of the men went in and dragged out a creature, I know not, and my father knew not, whether a child of Adam or a beast, but it was like a very foul and ill-shaped woman, and had 6 toes on its feet. The men wished to slay it, according to the law, declaring it to be a beast and lawful food, but when it saw the knife, it cried sadly and covered its face with its hands in terror, and my father said, By the Most High God, ye shall not slay the poor woman-beast which thus begs its life. I tell you, it is unlawful to eat one so like the children of Adam. And the beast or woman clung to him and hid under his cloak, and my father carried her for some time behind him on his horse, until they saw some creatures like her, and then he sent her to them, but he had to drive her from him by force, for she clung to him. Thinkest thou, O lady, it was really a beast, or some sort of the children of Adam? God knows, and he only, said I piously, but by his indulgent name, thy father, O Sheikh, was a true nobleman. Sheikh Yusuf chimed in and gave a decided opinion that a creature able to understand the sight of the knife and act so was not lawful to kill for food. You see what a real Arab Don Quixote was. It is a picture worthy of him, the tall, noble-looking Ababda sheltering the poor woman-beast, most likely a gorilla or chimpanzee, and carrying her en croupe. End of letter 96. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 97 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, Luxor, January 26, 1867. Dearest Mother, I must betray dear Sheikh Yusuf's confidence and tell you his love story. A young fellow ran away with a girl he loved a short time ago, she having told him that her parents wanted to marry her to another, and that she would go to such a spot for water, and he must come on a horse, beat her, and carry her off. The beating saves the maiden's blushes. Well, the lad did it, and carried her to Salamea, where they were married, and then they went to Sheikh Yusuf to get him to conciliate the family, which he did. He told me the affair, and I saw he sympathized much with the runaways. "Ah," he said, "lady, it is love, and that is terrible. I can tell thee love is dreadful indeed to bear." Then he hesitated and blushed and went on, "I felt it once, lady. It was the will of God that I should love her who is now my wife. 13 years ago I loved her and wished to marry her, but my father and her grandfather, my uncle the Sharif, had quarrelled, and they took her and married her to another man. I never told anyone of it, but my liver was burning and my heart ready to burst for 3 years. But when I met her I fixed my eyes on the ground for fear she should see my love, and I said to myself, 'O Yusuf, God has afflicted thee, praise be unto him. Do thou remember thy blood, Sharif, and let thy conduct be that of the Beni Azra, who, when they are thus afflicted, die rather than sin, for they have the strongest passion of love and the greatest honor.' And I did not die, but went to Cairo to the Gamal el-Azhar and studied, and afterwards I married twice, as thou knowest, but I never loved any but that one, and when my last wife died the husband of this one had just divorced her to take a younger and prettier one, and my father desired me then to take her, but I was half afraid, not knowing whether she would love me, but praise be to God I consented, and behold, poor thing, she also had loved me in like manner. I thought when I went to see her that she was unusually radiant with new-married happiness, and she talked of El Sheikh with singular pride and delight, and embraced me and called me mother most affectionately. Is this not a pretty piece of regular Arab romance like Ghamem? My boat has gone up to-day with 2 very nice Englishmen in her. Their young Maltese dragoman, aged 24, told me his father often talked of the commissioners and all they had done, and how things were changed in the island for the better. Everything spiritual and temporal has been done for the boat's safety in the cataract. Urgent letters to the Ma'on el-Badr, and him of Aswan to see the men, and plenty of prayers and vows to Abul Hazaz on behalf of the property of the lady, or Kurzweg, our boat, as she is commonly called in Luxor. Here we have the other side of the misery of the Candian business. In Europe, of course, the obvious thing is the suffering of the Cretans. But really I am more sorry for the poor fellow-lads who are dragged away to fight in a quarrel they had no hand in raising, and with which they have no sympathy. The times suggest that the Sultan should relinquish the island, and that has been said in many an Egyptian hut long before. The Sultan is worn out, and the Muslims here know it, and they say it would be the best stay for the Arabs if he were driven out, that, after all, a Turk never was the true Amir el-Mu'amin, commander of the faithful. Only in Europe people talk and write as if it were all Muslim versus Christian, and the Christians were all oppressed, and the Muslims all oppressors. I wish they could see the domineering of the Greeks and Maltese as Christians. The Englishman domineers as a free man and a Briton, which is different,
and that is the reason why the Arabs wish for English rule, and would dread that of Eastern Christians. Well they may, for if ever Greeks do reign in Stamboul, the sufferings of the Muslims will satisfy the most eager fanatic that ever cursed Mahound. I know nothing of Turkey, but I have seen and heard enough to know that there are plenty of other divisions besides that of Christian and Muslim. Here in Egypt it is clear enough, it is Arab versus Turk, and the Copt siding with the stronger for his interest, while he rather sympathizes with his brother Fella. At all events, the Copt don't want other Christians to get power. He would far rather have a Muslim than a heretic ruler, above all the hated Greek. The Englishman he looks on as a variety of Muslim, a man who washes, has no pictures in his church, who has married bishops, and above all, who does not fast from all that has life for half the year. And this heresy is so extreme as not to give offence unless he tries to convert. The Pasha's sons have just been up the river. They ordered a reading of the Koran at the tomb of Abul Hajjaj, and gave every alim sixpence. We have not left off chafing, as Maurice would say, Sheikh Ala ud-Din, the Muezzin, and sundry others on this superb bakshish, and one old fiki never knows whether to laugh, to cry, or to scold, when I ask to see the shawl and tarboosh he has bought with the presents of pashas. Yusuf and the Kadi, too, had been called on to contribute baskets of bread to the steamer, so that their sixpences were particularly absurd. The little boy whose father died is still with Ababda, who will not let him travel to Cairo till the weather is warmer and they find a safe person to be kind to him. Rachma says, please God, he will go with the sit, perhaps. Hassan has consoled him with sugar-cane and indulgence, and if I lose Mabruk, and the little boy likes me, he may fall into my hands as Ahmed has done. I hear he is a good boy, but a perfect savage. That, however, I find makes no difference. In fact, I think they learn faster than those who have ways of their own. So I see Terence was a nigger. I would tell Rachma so if I could make him understand who Terence was, and that he, Rachma, stood in need of any encouragement. But the worthy fellow never imagines that his skin is in any way inferior to mine. End of letter 97. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 98 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, Luxor, February 3, 1867. Dearest Alec, the boat goes down tomorrow, and I have little to add to Mutter's letter, only that I am better. There is a man here from Girga who says he is married to a Guinea fairy princess. I have asked to be presented to her, but I suspect there will be some hitch about it. It will be like Alexis's Allez, madame, vous êtes trop incrédule. The unintelligible thing is that the motive which prompts wonders and miracles here, seeing that the wonder-workers do not get any money by it, and indeed very often give, like the Indian saint I told you of who gave me $4. His miracles were all gratis, which was the most miraculous thing of all in a saint. I am promised that the Guinea shall come through the wall. If she should do it, I shall be compelled to believe in her, as there are no mechanical contrivances in Luxor. All the harem here believe it, and the man's human wife swears she waits on her like a slave, and backs her husband's lie or delusion fully. I have not seen the man, but I should not wonder if it were a delusion. Real bona fide visions and revelations are so common, and I think there is but little downright imposture. Meanwhile, familiarity breeds contempt. Jinns, afrits, and shaitans inspire far less respect than the stupidest ghost at home, and the devil, Iblis, is reduced to deplorable insignificance. He is never mentioned in the pulpit, or in religious conversation, with the respect he enjoys in Christian countries. I suppose we may console ourselves with the hope that he will pay off the Muslims for their neglect of him hereafter. I cannot describe to you the misery here now. Indeed, it is wearisome even to think of. Every day some new tax. Now every beast, camel, cow, sheep, donkey, horse, is made to pay. The fellaheen can no longer eat bread. They are living on barley meal, mixed with water and new green stuff, vetches, etc., which to people used to good food is terrible,
and I see all my acquaintances growing seedy and ragged and anxious. Yusuf is clear of debt, his religion having kept him from borrowing, but he wants to sell his little slave girl, and has sold his donkey, and he is the best off. The taxation makes life almost impossible. 100 piastres for fedden, a tax on every crop, on every annual fruit, and again when it is sold in the market, on every man, on charcoal, on butter, on salt, on the dancing girls. I wonder I am not tormented for money. Not above 3 people have tried to beg or borrow. Thanks for the Westminster epilogue. It always amuses me much. So, Terence was a nigger. There is no trace of the negro boy in his Davis. My nigger has grown huge, and has developed a voice of thunder. He is of the elephantine rather than the tiger species, a very mild young savage. I shall be sorry when Palgrave takes him. I am tempted to buy Yusuf's nice little Dinka girl to replace him, only a girl is such an impossibility where there is no regular harem. In the boat Ahmed is enough under Omar, but in this large, dusty house, and with errands to run, and comers and goers to look after, pipes and coffee and the like, it takes 2 boys to be comfortable. Maybrook, too, washes very well. It is surprising how fast the boys learn, and how well they do their work. Ahmed, who is quite little, would be a perfectly sufficient servant for a man alone. He can cook, wash, clean the rooms, make the beds, do all the table service, knife and plate cleaning, all fairly well, and I believe now he would get along even without Omar's orders. Mabruk is slower, but he has the same merit our poor Hassan had. He never forgets what he has been once told to do, and he is clean in his work, though hopelessly dirty as to his clothes. He cannot get used to them, and takes a roll in the dust or leans against a dirty wall, oblivious of his clean-washed blue shirt. Ahmet is quicker and more careless, but they both are good boys and very fond of Omar. Uncle Omar is the form of address, though he scolds them pretty severely if they misbehave, and I observe that the hijinks take place chiefly when only I am in the way, and Omar gone to market or the mosque. The little rogues have found out that their laughing does not affect my nerves, and I am often treated to a share in the joke. How I wish Rainey could see the children, they would amuse her. Yusuf's girl, Mir and Nezil, is a charming child, and very clever. Her enigmatic way of explaining everything to me, and her gestures, would delight you. Her cousin and future husband, age 5, she is 6, broke the doll which I had given her, and her description of it was most dramatic, ending with a wheedling glance at the cupboard, and of course there are no more dolls there, oh no, no more. She is a fine little creature, far more Arab than Felaha, quite a shaitan, her father says. She came in full of making cakes for Biram, and offered her services. "Oh, my aunt, if thou wantest anything I can work," said she, tucking up her sleeves. End of letter 98. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 99 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Mrs. Austin, Luxor, March 6, 1867. Dearest Mother, the warm weather has set in, and I am already as much the better for it as usual. I had a slight attack, not nearly so bad as that at Sudan, but it lingered, and I kept my bed as a measure of precaution. Dear Yusuf was with me the evening I was attacked, and sat up all night to give me my medicine every hour. At the prayer of dawn, an hour and a half before sunrise, I heard his supplications for my life and health, and for you and all my family, and I thought of what I had lately read, how the Greeks massacred their own patriots because the Turks had shown them mercy, a display of temper which I hope will enlighten Western Christendom as to what the Muslims have to expect, if they, the Western Christians, help the Eastern Christians to get the upper hand. Yusuf was asking about a lady the other day who has turned Catholic. "Poor thing," said he, "the priests have drawn out her brains through her ears, no doubt. But never fear, her heart is good and her charity great, and God will not deal hardly with those who serve him with their hearts, though it is sad she should bow down before images. But look at thy slave Maybrook. Can he understand 100th part of the thoughts of thy mind? Nevertheless he loves thee, and obeys thee with pleasure and alacrity, and wilt thou punish him because he knows not all thy ways? And shall God, who is so much higher above us as thou art above thy slave, be less just than thou? I pinned him at once, and insisted on knowing the orthodox belief, but he quoted the Koran and the decisions of the Ulema to show that he stretched no point as far as Jews and Christians are concerned, and that even idolaters are not to be condemned, my man. Yusuf wants me to write a short account of the faith from his dictation. Would anyone publish it? It annoys him terribly to hear the Muslims constantly accused of intolerance, and he is right. It is not true. They show their conviction that their faith is the best in the world with the same sort of naivete that I have seen in very innocent and ignorant English women, in fact, display a sort of religious conceit, but it is not often bitter or heinous, however much they are in earnest. I am going to write to Palgrave and ask him to let me send another boy or the money for Mabruk, who can't endure the notion of leaving me. Achmet, who was always hankering after the fleshpots of Alexandria, got some people belonging to the boats to promise to take him, and came home and picked a quarrel and departed. Poor little chap, the Sheikh el-Beled put a spoke in his wheel by informing him he would be wanted for the Pasha's works, and must stay in his own place. Since he went, Mabruk has come out wonderfully and does his own work, and Achmet's with the greatest satisfaction. He tells me he likes it best, he likes to be quiet. He just suits me and I him. It is humiliating to find how much more I am to the taste of savages than of the polite circles. The old lady of the Maon promised to come to me, but I would not let her leave her home, which would be quite an adventure to her. I knew she would be exclamatory and lament over me, and say every minute, "Oh, my liver! Oh, my eyes! The name of God upon thee, and never mind! Tomorrow, please God, thou wilt be quite well," and so forth. People send me such odd dishes, some very good. Yusuf's wife packed 2 calves' feet tight in a little black earthen pot, with a seasoning of herbs, and baked it in the bread oven, and the result was excellent. Also, she made me a sort of small macaroni, extremely good. Now, too, we can get milk again, and Omar makes kishta, alias clotted cream. Do send me a good edition of the Arabian Nights in Arabic, and I should much like to give Yusuf Lane's Arabic dictionary. He is very anxious to have it. I can't read the Arabian Nights, but it is a favorite amusement to make one of the party read aloud. A stray copy of Kamar es-Zeman and Sit Budurura went all around Luxor, and was much coveted for the village soirees, but its owner departed and left us to mourn over the loss of his manuscripts. I must tell you a black standard of respectability. It is quite equal to the English one of the gig or the ham for breakfast. I was taking counsel with my friend Rachma, a negro, about Mabruk, and he urged me to buy him of Palgrave, because he saw that the lad really loved me. Moreover, said he, the boy is of a respectable family, for he told me his mother wore a cow's tail down to her heels, that and a girdle to which the tail is fastened, and a tiny leathern apron in front, constituted her whole wardrobe, and that she beat him well when he told lies or stole his neighbor's eggs. Poor woman! I wish this abominable slave trade had spared her and her boy. What folly it is to stop the Circassian slave trade, if it is stopped, and to leave this. The Circassians take their own children to market as a way of providing for them handsomely, and both boys and girls like being sold to the rich Turks, but the blacks and Abyssinians fight hard for their own liberty and that of their cubs. Mabruk swears that there were 2 Europeans in the party which attacked his village and killed he knew not how many, and carried him and others off. He was not stolen by Arabs, or by Barbaries, like Hassan, but taken in a war from his home by the seaside, a place called Buki, and carried in a ship to Jeddah, and thence back to Kosir and Kenna, where Palgrave bought him. I must say that once here the slaves are happy and well off, but the waste of life and the misery caused by the trade must be immense. The slaves are coming down the river by hundreds every week, and are very cheap, 12 to 20 pounds for a fine boy, and 9 pounds and upwards for a girl. I heard that the last Gelab offered a woman and a baby for anything anyone would give for them, on account of the trouble of the baby. By the by, Mabruk displays the negro talent for babies. Now that Achmet is gone, who scolded them and drove them out, Mohammed's children, quite babies, are forever trotting after Mabu, as they pronounce his name, and he talks incessantly to them. It reminds me so of Janet and poor Hassan, but Mabruk is not like Hassan. He is one of the sons of Anak, and already as big and strong as a man, with the most prodigious chest and limbs. Don't be at all uneasy about me as to care. Omar knows exactly what to do, as he showed the other day when I was taken ill. I had shown him the medicines and given him instructions, so I had not even to speak, and if I were to be ill enough to want more help, Yusuf would always sit up alternate nights, but it is not necessary. Arabs make no grievance about broken rest. They don't go to bed properly, but lie down half-dressed, and have a happy faculty of sleeping at odd times, and anyhow, which enables them to wait on one night and day, without distressing themselves as it distresses us. Thursday. A telegram has just come announcing that Janet will leave Cairo tomorrow in a steamer, and therefore be here, inshallah, this day week. I enclose a note from a Copt boy, which will amuse you. He is sapping in English, and I teach him whenever I am able. I am a special favorite with all the young lads. They must not talk much before grown men, so they come and sit on the floor round my feet, and ask questions and advice, and enjoy themselves amazingly. Hobbledehoyhood is very different here from what it is with us. They care earlier for the affairs of the grown-up world, and are more curious and more polished, but lack the fine animal gaiety of our boys. The girls are much more gamine than the boys, and more romping and joyous. It is very warm now. I fear Janet will sigh terribly over the heat. They have left their voyage too late for such as do not love the Shems el-Kabir, the big sun, which has just begun. I who worship Amun-Ra love to feel him in his glory. It is long since I had any letters. I want so to hear how you all are. End of letter 99. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org. Letter 100 of Letters from Egypt by Lady Lucy Duff Gordon. Read for LibriVox.org into the public domain. To Sir Alexander Duff Gordon, March 7, 1867. Dearest Alec, I have written a long yarn to mutter and am rather tired, so I only write to say I am much better. The heat has set in, and of course with it my health has mended, but I am a little shaky and afraid to tire myself. Moreover, I want to nurse up and be stronger by next Thursday, when Janet and Ross are expected. Who wants to whitewash Miss Rampsonitis and identify her with the beloved of Solomon or Salim? My brain spun round as I read it. Must I answer him, or will you? A dragoman gave me an old broken travelling armchair, and Yusuf sat in an armchair for the first time in his life. "May the soul of the man who made it find a seat in paradise," was his exclamation, which strikes me as singularly appropriate on sitting in a very comfortable armchair. Yusuf was thankful for small mercies in this case. I am afraid Janet may be bored by all the people's civility. They will insist on making great dinners and fantasias for her, I am sure. I hope they will go on to Aswan and take me with them. The change will do me good, and I should like to see as much of her as I can before she leaves Egypt for good. The state of business here is curious. The last regulations have stopped all money-lending, and the prisons are full of Sheikh el-Beled whose villages can't pay the taxes. Most respectable men have offered me to go partners with them now in their wheat, which will be cut in 6 weeks, if only I would pay their present taxes, I to take half the crop and half the taxes, with interest out of their half, some such trifle as 30% per month. Our prison is full of men, and we send them their dinner à tour de rôle. The other day a woman went with a big wooden bowl on her head, full of what she had cooked for them, accompanied by her husband. One Khalil Effendi, a new vakil here, was there, and said, "What dost thou ask here, thou harlot?" Her husband answered, "That is no harlot, O Effendim, but my wife." Whereupon he was beaten till he fainted, and then there was a lamentation. They carried him down past my house, with a crowd of women all shrieking like mad creatures, especially his wife, who yelled and beat her head and threw dust over it, more majorum, as you see in the tombs. The humours of tax-gathering in this country are quite impayable, you perceive, and ought to be set forth on the escutcheon of the new knight of the bath, whom the queen hath delighted to honour. Kawas batant, fella rampant, and fella ha pleurant would be the proper blazon. Distress in England is terrible, but at least it is not the result of extortion, as it is here, while everything from nature is so abundant and glorious, and yet mankind so miserable. It is not a little hunger, it is the cruel oppression which maddens the people now. They never complained before, but now whole villages are deserted. The boat goes tomorrow morning, so I must say good-bye. End of letter 100. Read by Sibella Denton. All LibriVox files are in the public domain. For more information, please visit LibriVox.org.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.